another episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
Where we also get the calls wrong from time to time here on WGR550.com and on demand audio. We'll talk about the drama of yet another playoff series mired in controversy, and yet again, the Sharks somehow continue to be involved. Is there a shadow government going on? We'll find out more on that later. But the Sabres did something pretty important here, Frank.
They hired a coach. Coach Watch is over.
Coach Watch is indeed over. They bring in Ralph Krueger, who decided, you know, it's time to get back into hockey.
Yep.
So his NHL coaching stint was with the Edmonton Oilers. So what did we do? We brought in Jeff Chapman, who writes about the Oilers for SB Nation.
Copper and blue.
Copper and blue.
Yep.
And an old friend of ours as well. Chappy, it's Derek. It's Frank. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, any better, there'd be two of me. Thanks for having me. I hear that there's a coach.
Yes, there is a coach, and we got some questions. Because, yes, I mean, you did get to take a look at Ralph Krueger in a very limited time, but at the same time, I feel like you might know a little bit more about Ralph Krueger than we would right off the start.
Well, as far as that goes, he was around for the abbreviated, you know, the abbreviated lockout season in 2013, and the Oilers were currently going through, you know, whatever coaching carousel that they were in the midst of. So, yeah, I got to see him for a few dozen games in 2013, and he's kind of a different breed of coach than what you or I are normally, you know, what we'd expect a hire to be.
All right, so about Krueger in particular, with what his coaching style is he a guy that is going to be Phil Housley trying to put a square peg in a round hole, or is he someone that will be willing to adapt to the offensive talents that a team would have?
Well, I mean, I think every coach has some stubbornness into them, and every coach has kind of some preconceived ideas that are, you know, as you go on in your coaching career, you're going to change. I think there's a little stubbornness in Ralph Krueger, but I also think that, you know, to get where he's gotten and to be, have his hands in some, or his irons in so many fires, that you have to be willing to adapt. And you're going to look and you're going to hear a lot about the 2013 Oilers, about how they kind of fell by the wayside at the end there. And I caution you not to look too much into that, because, you know, everybody goes on a bad streak, and everybody has a good streak. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys that, because, you know, look at the last season where you had it. You know, you were first in the league for a little while, and then, you know, the wheels just kind of fell off. So, to answer your question, I think he's willing to adapt. You're going to hear the word cerebral tossed around a lot. Oh, he's a cerebral thinker. Well, I just think that he's willing to try things, and if this doesn't work, I don't see why he won't stir up the pot a little bit.
Talk about his time in Edmonton with the half season that he was the head coach, but also when he was an associate coach too with the Oilers from 2010 to 2012. Just talk about his time there and like what you saw out of him.
Well, like if you take a look at the head coaching time, you know, I mean, first off, you're going back on a really dark period of Oiler hockey. I mean, they won three of the, you know, that was the three draft picks they won first in a row. And, I mean, you had Taylor Hall and you had Ryan Nugent Hopkins and, to a lesser extent, Nail Yakupov, who were really big offensive talents. And, you know, that was supposed to be the star of the show. Those were the stars of the show. But when Krueger became in power, you know, he tried things and they were different. You know, there was a term 6 years ago called the Bélanger Triangle. They signed Eric Bélanger because they need more actual NHL players. And Krueger tried, you know, pretty much making him the 3C. And when that didn't work, they made him the fourth center. So, you know, this guy was brought in to kind of shore up things. And, you know, it didn't quite work the way that they wanted it to. But, you know, it kind of pigeons on my last question a little bit, and that he's willing to try things. He's not so much stubborn the fact that he's going to play like Vladimir Sobotka over and over and over again for 25 straight games. So, you know, I think you're going to learn real quick that, he's willing to try new things, and he's willing to make the best of a bad situation.
That probably couldn't have been better said there. I mean, you throw a Sobotka not being played 25 straight games as a 2C, that'd be fantastic. But I looked actually at a lot of the numbers from that 2012-2013 team, Chappie, and you lose that 9 of 10 toward the end of the season. They were in a playoff spot late on through the push there. But something that doesn't really get brought up is that there were 7 players that were at least half a point per game. So depth scoring all throughout the lineup. Taylor Hall was 50 points in 48 games. So you look at this and you can see that this is a guy who still can go ahead and cater to top-end talent, right?
You're going to see that he's going to play well to his star players, I think. You know, I mean, you play talent with talent. I think that's one of the easiest things. That, you know, it's one of the more obvious things that you have to go with. You know, for years, the Oilers were real short on talent up front. So you'd see a guy like McTavish, he'd end up playing the star talent with a guy like J.F. Shaw. You know, just a regular, you know, I don't want to say a plug, but a guy who's there to antagonize. Kruger plays people, I mean, from what I've seen, he plays players to their strengths, and, you know, he has a way of getting to them. So, I 48 games is kind of a small sample size to be making any real strong opinions about the guy. You know, you love him or you don't, but I think Buffalo's ready for a surprise.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be an interesting little thing to take a look at there, because I look at the career of a guy like Nail Yakupov. He actually had his best season in goal scoring under Kruger in that shortened season. He had 17 goals. So perhaps, you know, it could be encouraging for him to look at young talent, because you see a guy like a struggling Casey Mittelstadt, who had a rough go of it in his first season as a professional. And the question is going to be, is Kruger going to be able to help turn things around for Casey Mittelstadt and younger players like that and Tage Thompson?
Well, there's a lot of talk about him being an older coach, and he is going to be 60. But like I say, you know, there's a lot of progression there. There's a lot of ability to relate, you know, and try new things, you know, for the younger crowd. And you know, today's hockey player is not the same player as it was 10 years ago, isn't the same player as it was 25 years ago. So I think one of the things that's made Kruger successful on everything that he's done is that he's able to relate. And like I say, you know, he is 60, so people are going to be a little worried about that. But you know, if he can somehow, you know, release the, you know, untapped potential of Tage Thompson or Casey Mittelstadt, I think everybody will agree almost instantaneously that the hire will have paid off.
So, Chappie, with the rest of everything that has gone on with the Oilers, and I remember that.
What do you mean?
I remember that process with. I remember the process though with Kruger. He coached the shortened season, and it seemed like, you know, he was probably going to end up in serious consideration for the job. It was just something, they were just that much more impressed with Dallas Eakins, I would imagine?
Recency bias, I think, played a large part into it. You know, you look at the fact that, you know, you say, oh, they were in the playoffs. Well, Steve Tanlini's big move at trade deadline to get them over the hump that year was to trade, I believe it was a draft pick for Jared Smithson of the Florida Panthers at the time. And Smithson was a bottom six forward. And I don't know if you've seen that clip of Kruger on Oilers on Oil Change, but you know he's motivating everybody, and everybody goes, "Yeah, that's great." There was a clip of Tambellini going, "We're going for it." So, I mean, they traded, you know, for Jared Smithson and whatever. That was their big move. What does this all have to do with anything? Recency bias. They took a look at the 9 losses or 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10. They were all against playoff caliber clubs, and they kind of went, "Well, we can't bring this guy back." That's how I assume it all went down. But I don't think that Eakins was just, you know, that much more enamoring. I just think that they looked at him and they brought him in, and that was going to be the way. So Eakins had some, you know, crazy ideas, and, you know, so I say crazy. They were just different.
No.
He had 48 games, and unfortunately I can't get a huge body of work on 48 games. I can't judge a guy after 48 games and go, "This is what we're going to do." What do the Oilers see? I don't know. I think they're a bad hockey club. And they make bad decisions sometimes, most of the time, almost all the time. So they fired him via Skype, which I think is important, because that just shows you how not a hide leather, you know, the operation was at that time. So what do they see? I don't know. I think they saw a different guy who was a good Canadian boy, who was upstart, and, you know, he said the right things. And Kruger wasn't that.
Now, you mentioned earlier on in this interview about don't look too much into that slide at the end of the season. Do you care to elaborate on that, I should say?
Well, like, you know, we were talking about earlier, you know, the Sabres had a really big winning streak. And if you went back to November of last season, you'd say, oh, man, we're really, you know, the Sabres would say, you know, we're primed all we got to do is play 500 hockey, and we're in the stands. And then, you know, what happened in January happened. And so you can't really get the wealth of a man's work or a wealth of a person's work over a small sample size. So 9-10 games, you might win them all. You might lose them all. I can't judge your entire coaching career on those 9 or 10 games, especially if all you have is 48 total.
All right, well, so you mentioned, you know, that this is an Oilers team that makes bad decisions and everything like that. And you couldn't be talking to more of a mirror fan base as the Sabres right now. You know, I know, I've known you for a while, and I know that you were a very anti-Tim Murray guy, which I don't blame you for. So the current state of the Oilers, they are a team that is also looking at getting a coach. And what do you think they need to do in the direction that Edmonton needs to go into to get Connor McDavid back into the playoffs and let people see the best player in all of hockey?
Well, they hired Ken Holland as their GM, which I'm really not wild about.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're used to it. They hired Ken Holland, which, you know, based on his you know, 10 games or his last 10 years have been almost, you know, they haven't been great. They need to hire, or they need to interview everyone. And similar to the GM search, which I don't even know if Holland got an interview, but they need to interview everyone they can. You know, find a guy who's progressive-minded, who can speak to the younger folks, you know, and the players, and they can relate. You know, don't be afraid to try something new. And, you know, if there's some talk right now, Dave Tippett, which I'm really not wild about, and there's some talk about bringing back Todd Nelson, who had a stint after Dallas Eakins got fired. I'd be more in touch with that, more in tune with that. But I think they need to interview as many people as they can, you know, at least 5-6 people. And then they just, you know, they need to put progress first and where they think the most progress can be made. And that seems simple and it sounds easier than it's done probably. But, you know, the retreads are great, but we need to, you know, it's going to be Connor McDavid's fifth year coming up now, and it's almost the same song we were singing 5 years ago. So that's what they need to do.
What do you think is going to end up being the biggest move of the offseason for the Oilers? Is it going to be hiring that coach and trying to get the guys that are here now going? Or is there a certain move that they need to make in order to take that next step forward and get that progress that you just mentioned? I could think of the obvious one, but, you know, and that's getting rid of Milan Lucic in any way you can.
Well, that's you answered your own question there. And the thing is that they need to find cap space, and they need to find it fast. We don't know where the upper level will be set for the 2019-2020. God, time goes fast. Don't ever get old. we don't know where the upper limit's going to be on 2019-2020. So if it's something generous like $4 million and it becomes $83.5 million, that's still only going to leave the Oilers about $11 or $12 million in cap space to sign 7 players. So you're either going to depend a ton on your rookies and your minimum wage guys, or you're going to find a way to create cap space. And that's the number one thing going in this offseason. I mean, yes, they have to hire a coach. Yes, they do. But they have to create cap space because they have guys like Ty Ratty and Zach Cassian on their top 6. And that's not going to work. All right. So they have to create some cap space, and they have to sign 2 scoring wingers. They have to sign, you know, or they have to hope to acquire a bottom four, you know, or not a bottom four, excuse me, a top 4 puck-moving defenseman that doesn't cost Taylor Hall. They need to find another goaltender, whether it be a 1A or a 1B or a backup, in case the wheels fall off on Mikko Koskinen, which was another questionable signing. So step one, yeah, find a coach. Step 1A, you got to create some cap space. And if Milan Lucic, I don't know if you got a chance to hear the interview about him saying sweet things about Vancouver. If he wants to go to Vancouver, they got to find a way to make that happen without busting the bank.
So, you want Rasmus Ristolainen?
I have a lot of time for a lot of players for the right price. If you want to take if you want to take 50% of that salary, and I can interest you in Milan Lucic or another, if I can interest you in Chris Russell,
no,
then I might have time. I might have time for a 50% or a 66% Rasmus Ristolainen. I have a lot of time. You know, I have time for guys like Billy Mayno at the right price, right? But at $27 million plus a $10 million signing bonus, I do not. So it's something like that. Do I want Risto? Sure. You have your people, call my people, and we'll talk.
All right. Sounds good. We'll only ask for R&H. Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Get out of here, Frank. Get out of here.
All right. Chappie, thank you for joining us today for the Leftovers podcast.
You know where to find me. It's not that difficult, and it's a pleasure. So, anytime, boys.
We know where to find you. Tell the good people where they can find you.
You can find me online at copperandblue.com on the SB Nation network. Or you can find me on Twitter and tell me that I don't know anything at New Wave Oil, all one word. So drop in for the pancakes and stay for the desserts. It's a good time.
All right, pancakes and dessert. That's Jeff Chapman.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your time.
All right, thank you, Chappie.
Thanks, bye-bye Chappie.
Now.
That's Jeff Chapman with SB Nation and Copper and Blue. And again, as he said, you can follow him at New Wave Oil on Twitter. It's good to hear from Chappie.
Always.
It's always good to hear from Chappie. And, I mean, the more parallels that the Sabres and Oilers seem to have, I guess the more that we might need to get in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not going to go ahead and hope that we have to anytime soon. Because other than Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I don't know what else I'd want from there right now. I mean, I'd want Connor McDavid, but that's just not in the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it's not. Unless he asks for a trade.
But then what's Buffalo giving up? Everything.
Yeah.
So, again, no worries there. So, Frank, I've got an interesting take on this thing with the whole San Jose-St. Louis thing.
So go right into last night's game.
Here's the problem with sports. And it's also the beauty of sports.
Mm-hmm.
It's never perfect.
No.
Calls are going to get messed up.
They happen all the time.
And it's your job as a fan base to not get too salty about it.
Even the obvious ones get messed up.
And it's going to happen.
It's becoming more apparent in
this
calendar year.
We've seen a forward lateral be called straight up as a normal backwards lateral.
We just saw a pass interference call not get called.
It's tough being a ref, and they're going to miss some pretty obvious things sometimes.
Refereeing is a tough job. It's extremely tough.
Will I make fun of them for missing
sure.
it? Yes.
Of course.
But I'm also going to acknowledge, yeah, they kind of screwed that up. But at the same time, it's not like that.
The whole
In replay, in slow motion, it's very easy to see that.
The whole thing
in real time with a bunch of bodies hanging around, that might not have been seen. And it wasn't seen, and you can kind of see how. For me, it's this. The San Jose Sharks are getting rather fortunate these playoffs. With some interesting calls in each round that have allowed them to keep moving on.
Yeah.
So what does this all mean?
It means San Jose's winning the cup.
No, it means San Jose might be winning the cup, but it also means sometimes you really just have to be lucky more than you have to be good.
A lot of Sharks fans are going at it like, "Oh, this is the makeup for all the years of them getting screwed over in the playoffs."
The only thing that they would do is they would screw themselves over.
Yeah.
So those fans got to remember something there. For the St. Louis fans, there's one thing you have to do. Don't be Saints fans.
Ooh.
And continue to bitch about it for 4 months.
Yeah.
First off, you let that game go into overtime. That's your fault. Kind of like how I said this about the Las Vegas thing.
Mm-hmm.
You let that game, like Vegas, you let them
score four
goals,
power play goals
in one power play. And guess what? It's possible to kill a five-minute power play. It's possible. You can let up one or two, you know, minimize the damage. You let up four. You gave the entire lead. And then you even forced overtime. So guess what? That's on you. St. Louis, you let Logan Couture tie it. That's on you.
Yeah.
There's nothing else I can say about that other than that's the beauty and sometimes frustrating part of sports is that it's always going to be imperfect. The dumbest goals happen sometimes.
Yeah.
And guess what? That's because sports are not perfect. Did they get the call wrong? Absolutely.
Yeah, they did.
Do I want more review in my hockey when offsides review already needs to be shot into the sun? No.
No.
Why put more into the hands of officials when you don't seem to like the officials?
It's, I mean, it's also, the refs are just following the rules too. They
you
are correct,
yes.
when it said that is a non-reviewable play.
I don't.
They are correct.
I do not get why, if you put a review in, that should be something that could be reviewed. Oh, I know why, because it's never happened before.
Yeah. However, they do. It is apparent now that they need to modify the coach's challenge rule for going into next season. And now the question, so if they know that they have to modify it, they have to find a way to make it so that everyone is happy.
It's got to be as simple as this. If you're going to do a coach's challenge, it has got to be on one specific reason and one reason only. Kind of like how with the NFL and the coaches' challenge, when they were initially introduced, It was, what do you need to review? What are you looking at? I want to see if this guy had both feet down inbounds with the catch. Okay. You have to specify to the referee what you're looking for so that he knows what he has to look for.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. You can challenge any play that happens. But you can only make that challenge after the whistle, obviously. So in this case with last night, Craig Berube can go to the ref and say, hey, there was a hand pass right before that goal. Look at that. Look at it.
Now, here's the bad news. You ready? This is the NHL.
True.
You think they're going to get this right?
No.
I'd rather they not touch it. I'd rather they ignore it, sweep it under the damn rug. Because if the NHL tries to revise something with review, I've got $10 that says it's going to go poorly. And if you actually have belief that the NHL is going to do it right, at me at Derek Kramer 49.
I have no faith that they would do it right. But even then, like, I think that's the only thing that they can do that would be right. Just give the coaches one challenge per game, and they could challenge whatever they want to challenge.
Yes.
A penalty, the goal for this reason, anything.
Yes.
The NHL's not going to do anything about it, though.
They're not going to get it right. I don't think they're going to get it right.
No. And even if they do make changes to the challenge, it's going to be dumb. It's going to be stupid.
That's exactly what I think, is that they're going to do
They're going to change it and it's going to be stupid, or they're going to do nothing and piss everyone off more.
I think I'd rather the latter.
I'd rather they not do
You give me a choice, well. I'm going to go ahead and say, let's leave the NHL actually out of this part.
Yeah.
And just tell St. Louis fans, look, you got hosed. Welcome to the party.
Yeah.
Happens.
But St. Louis has this now. It was only game 3.
Yeah, it's only game 3.
Sharks may be up 2-1 in the series. Win game 4 and you're right back there.
Yeah, you have an entire series left. There's still plenty of games left. Yeah. This isn't a do or die kind of instance.
This wasn't an elimination game.
It wasn't game 7.
No. An elimination game in general.
Yeah.
So,
hell, this game didn't even put you on the brink.
Bounce back. Just bounce back now.
Yeah. This game doesn't even put you on the brink.
The players said it right. Said everything right. We just got to bounce back.
Yeah. Because
it sucks, but we got to move forward.
Yeah. Like, this game didn't even put it at 3 games for the Sharks. No,
it's only 2-1.
It's only 2-1. So if you lose the rest of the series, well, yeah, that part sucked, but it's still only responsible for getting them to halfway home.
Yeah.
There it is. That's my take on it. I think that, for me, I don't care if it was the right call or wrong call or that they missed the call. It's hockey. It's going to happen. And I'd rather the NHL not get more involved with this sort of thing because I know they're going to get it wrong.
Yeah.
This is just going to be, sports aren't perfect. Take the L. And you're not even on the brink of elimination. So if you lose the rest of the series, it's on you.
That's on you.
Just like how it was on Vegas to give up 4 power play goals.
Yeah. Yep.
Just like how The Saints had, just like how the Saints had the ball in overtime.
Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that all of the refs missed it.
It is befuddling, but there's a lot of bodies around.
Because I think
you can't really
tell
that he's directing the puck with his hand.
Yeah.
They could see that in live time and how fast things go as the puck bounced off of him.
Because I think refs can overturn their own, like, another ref's call. They say, hey, you know, ref will make a call, and another ref will come in and say, hey, no, that's not the right call. This is the right call.
Yeah. And then they have a conference over it and everything like that.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that none of the refs converged and said that, was that a hand pass? And they said, and all of them just must have missed it. Like, I'm amazed at all four of them.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like they all converged initially to talk about that play, about it possibly being a reviewable play, which they all agreed it's not, which is the right call. But no one discussed whether or not that play was actually a hand pass. It was like, was that a hand pass? I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
We don't know what they were saying. We don't know.
That might have been discussed. But if they're not sure, I'd rather they just say, okay, then it's a good goal.
Yeah, they have to go call on the ice then. They have to, because you can't review it.
It happened. If you're mad about it, well, first off, what stake do you have in it?
Besides being a Blues fan.
Well, that's the question. I mean, if you are a Blues fan and you're listening to this podcast, well,
thanks.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Second, sorry. Third, you're probably not listening after what I said.
Yeah. You're not done. If you're a Blues fan, you're still listening right now. You're not done. It's not over. You can still come back.
And if you lose the rest of the series, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's a big deal. It happens. These things happen. These playoffs have been rife with controversy, which is not good. Every round has seen like a what the hell moment.
I mean, it is a big deal, but it's in this one case, it's okay. It was only in game. It happened in game three. At least it didn't happen in a game seven.
Yes. It didn't happen.
It's just another list of like why the NHL needs to change the coach's challenge rule. But at the same time, you don't want them to because you know they're going to mess it up.
Yeah. But again, you notice, though, that the Sharks every round have gotten some interesting calls. And there's the Vegas one with that five-minute power play. There's the Colorado one where there was an offsides in a game seven.
Yep.
And now there's this. But this one, only in a game three. The other two were game sevens.
Mm-hmm.
San Jose might be a team of destiny.
I think the conspiracy, the refs want Joel Thornton to win the cup.
The NHL's rigged for the San Jose Sharks. My column.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I did so many things to piss off my computer just now.
Well, that's what you get.
Sometimes it's all about the act, Frank. It's all about it.
Take the bit too far.
You need to, sometimes you just have to commit. C-O-M-M-I-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T. T.
So what else you want to talk about?
Well,
maybe we could talk more about Kruger.
We could. And here's my basic thought on it.
Hmm.
Thank God.
Yep.
Two reasons. One, it's not Jacques Martin or Bob Hartley.
Second reason, it's not Bob Hartley or Jacques Martin.
Third reason, or my actual second reason, you smart ass, this is a risk.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Botchel could have easily went with a safer hire.
Like a Tippett,
or someone along those lines.
Or Martin or Bob Hartley.
Yeah. You could have went with the safer hire.
The retread.
So that he can kind of protect his job a little bit.
Yep.
Instead, he goes with the innovator.
Yep.
He goes with the guy that is an intriguing option in Ralph Krueger. We don't know if this is going to work because we sang the praises of the Phil Housley hire.
Yep.
We all did. Everyone did. Everyone was duped.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this is it.
I mean, this was a risk for Bottrell no matter what.
Yes.
No matter who he hired.
Yes, but it's riskier because it's a guy with only 48 games of head coaching experience.
Yes.
So he's ready. He's all in on this. And I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah,
I would like to see where this goes. And I'm happy to know that they're at least not scared of a bold move still. Because here we are. Here we were talking about if they hire Jacques Martin, I'm looking at a new general manager because this guy doesn't get it.
Yeah.
They're doing something different, and I'm all for that. This is big for me. I think that, mm-hmm. you know.
It's big for the
For the first
franchise.
Time in a while. For the first time in a while, the Sabres franchise is actually giving me a slight inkling of hope.
Again.
And now this leads you to Jeff Skinner. That's your next task. Skinner was interested in who the head coach would be.
Yep.
Duh. Anytime that you're looking at the chance of playing again for this team, you want to see who the coach is for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to sign a long-term contract.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really was a no-duh at this point. Like, why is Jeff Skinner not signed? Well, he doesn't know who the boss is yet. Would you go apply for a job where you don't know where a boss is? Like, there's no boss there yet?
No.
No. What if they end up on Jacques Martin? After Skinner signs an 8-year deal. And they try to play trap hockey.
Ugh. Get out.
Exactly. I'm interested in where this goes. I'm excited about this hire. But I also have to say one other thing. And this is Mr. Jokey Joke time. How the hell did Ralph Krueger accept the job after talking to fans? We're kind of dumb.
It was...
We are not to be trusted with things. Let alone a head coach's opinion of our fan base.
Yeah.
This doesn't pertain to everybody, but this happens. I've screened enough calls in my life at this station that I'm going to shame a couple of people right now.
He went to different bars.
He went to different bars, Frank. Here's my problem. I've screened enough calls at this station that I know the horrors.
Yeah.
I wonder what the percentage was of the people that talked to Ralph Krueger that said, we need to sign grit and toughness and fighters guy. I wonder what percentage of that guy talked to Ralph Krueger while watching some playoff hockey.
Yeah, I want to know too.
I'm terrified of the percentage.
I want to know what fans were saying to him.
It would be very interesting.
Yeah.
But that said, I'm going to guess the percentage is rather low.
Yeah.
For Krueger to be like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. So maybe he got lucky. Maybe he talked to smart fans.
Maybe he got lucky, or we here just are not lucky with some of the people that call in.
That too.
That's not everybody.
That too.
I'm not making fun of everybody. I'm not shaming everybody. You got your opinions, they're your opinions, and that's okay. It's okay to be wrong sometimes. Hell, I'm the idiot that said Nathan Peterman will be fine in his first game ever. I'll always check myself. Before I try to get all higher or mightier than thou, I will always be the first one to say, well, this dummy over here said something about Nathan Peterman going to be okay in his first game in visiting the Chargers. So don't worry about it. It's okay to be wrong.
Krueger did say that when talking to Bottrell, he got the passion for coaching again. He originally said that he would only come back to the NHL in a president role, in a managerial role, not in coaching.
And the funny thing is that there were conversations between Bottrell and Krueger back in 2017.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you. If I gave you a hypothetical on this.
Yeah.
Say they hired Ralph Kruger and he was able to leave Southampton in 2017.
Yeah.
And you didn't have Phil Housley. Would you take a timeline where the Sabres might have actually made the playoffs with Evander Kane, Ryan O'Reilly, Robin Leonard, Jack Eichel, and Sam Reinhart, and Rasmus Ristolainen? Or would you take the current state of things where we do happen to get a Rasmus Dahlin?
I think it depends on what other moves are made. What's the state of the franchise like in terms of the depth they have?
You've got now. A 2C. That's for one damn sure thing, yeah. Is that you got your 2C.
Yeah.
And you end up with Casey Mittelstadt anyway.
You do end up with Casey Mittelstadt anyway, but
you don't.
You don't have Dahlin, so you don't have your number one defenseman because we know now that Ristolainen's not. What is Ristolainen playing like under Kruger in those 2 years? Is he better than what he is now? Is he that number one defenseman that we all thought he would be? Is the team still searching for that number one defenseman?
I would say the good
or
news
did
is,
they or did they get that number one defenseman through another trade? What other moves are made?
In the defense of that hypothetical, you happen to now have elite center depth, and you can move instead of Ryan O'Reilly, you can move Casey Mittelstadt for that young stalwart defenseman.
If you want to do that, yes.
Like I said, it's in defense of that hypothetical. Because obviously you don't have the choice anymore. It's what's happened has happened.
Yeah.
I also can't guarantee how well the Sabres would have done under Ralph Kruger, but I can imagine that you have a team with Ryan O'Reilly, Evander Kane, Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, and Rasmus Ristolainen, and Robin Leonard, who was actually halfway decent.
Yeah.
And finished 30 friggin' first.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't know.
So that's what I am fairly certain about Ralph Kruger that wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have finished in last. They wouldn't have been the very first team to finish in 31st place.
Yeah.
But that also would have meant you're not getting Rasmus Dahlin.
But then again, you still don't know that.
Hell, what if you end up winning the second lottery pick or the third lottery pick and you get a Svechnikov
or Kotkaniemi.
Yeah, that's not a...
Or anybody else. Or Brady Tkachuk.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have finished like 10 points out of the playoffs where normally they'd be at like 11 and they could have still won the lottery.
Yep.
Because that has almost happened.
True. Oh, well. I'm not that kind of guy that generally goes ahead and says, would you rather?
No.
But it's an interesting thing for me to think about.
Yeah, it's a thought.
Because what would have happened there? You don't know.
And it does sound like, too, that, I mean, with what we know now, I think Kruger was Batra's first choice all along.
Yeah, it would seem that way.
And I'm also talking about in 2017 when Batra was first
hired. I would agree with that.
Because I remember Batra had said that Jim Rutherford recommended Kruger. Because Kruger and Rutherford were together in Carolina when Rutherford was the GM there.
Right, and Kruger was part of the staff that won the Stanley Cup.
Yes. That we don't talk about anymore.
You were the one that told me to get over it. I'm over it.
I know, I'm joking.
A damn game?
Okay. Yes. But Rutherford recommended Kruger, so obviously Batra talked to him, but the way it sounded like he couldn't get out of his Southampton contract just yet, so Batra had to go a different direction. That direction became Phil Housley. And now that Kruger was released from his contract with Southampton this time around, Batra can circle back and they have the good conversations. And Kruger says, you know what, I want to coach again. Let's make it happen.
It's great though that you know the fires were invigorated because of the conversations with Batra, because
they also go back. Yeah. Like
he does mention though that on Chopin Bulldog, he mentioned that there were different offers from Europe and several NHL teams actually did contact him, and it was that he was like, this is the one that's getting me going here. This is the one that's rallying me up.
Yeah.
And that is something that I'm like, obviously a coach, I'm I'm guessing that a coach is always going to be excited with a new opportunity to coach a team because, mm-hmm. you know, you seem wanted, but this seems like something where
I wonder, other NHL teams have talked to him. Were they talking to him about coaching or were they talking to him about like a presidential role?
I don't know.
We don't know that.
Because, but that's the thing, is that that could be the interesting point.
Because Edmonton and Anaheim, as of right now, are the only other teams that don't have coaches. Or I think there's a third. I don't remember the third.
Ottawa?
Yes, Ottawa. That's it.
He mentions by first name Pierre, as in probably Dorian.
So then that would have. So he's like, no, I don't want to go to Ottawa.
Well, it's not even that for me. It's more or less I think that it's, well, you got someone here, and I'm interested.
I think it's a combo of that the job is open in Buffalo, and he's got the connections with Botterill already. He knows, because those two go back. Because
mm-hmm.
Botterill's dad taught Kruger when Kruger was in elementary school, so he knows the family.
Yeah.
So right there, you've got the connections. And with Rutherford too in Carolina, both have worked under Rutherford, that further establishes that connection. So when you have familiarity with a guy, and you're having good conversations, and yeah, it would reignite the passion for what you love to do.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm interested to see what happens here.
He's probably also saw a team that has Jack Eichel and Rasmus Dahlin and thinks, man, I want that. I want to coach those guys.
We'll see.
Who knows?
And I'm excited though that he is invigorated by the conversations from what Jason Botchell had, mentioned with him. So we'll see what happens.
I'm very excited. The more and more we were reading into it, when Kruger's name popped up the first time, the more and more we read into it, the more and more excited you got.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that the book that he wrote too? Have you seen that?
No.
Oh my God.
Is it a book on hockey?
I think it's just an autobiography.
All right.
But it's like all like just like about self motivating.
And this guy seems like he's
and it's more so because it's the cover of it is just great. It's just a cover of him. Like it looks like it's like him from the 80s.
I'm gonna Google this real quick.
And it's just a great picture.
I'm gonna Google this on Twitter. And see what happens here. So, all right. Frank, are you ready for me to get mad again?
What do you want to get mad about again?
Can the Carolina Hurricanes win a freaking game?
I hope so.
Because that'd be great.
Here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He looks like he should be in Goldfinger. This is the best picture of all goddamn time.
It's fantastic, isn't it? It's fantastic.
Like, seriously, he looks like 90s music video for a punk and or ska music video. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not. You're not. He has any sort of success.
Like the hair, it looks, I don't think it's frosted tips, but it looks like frosted tips.
Okay, if he has success with the Sabres, we got to buy the book.
If he has success with the Sabres, I might just get my hair done like that.
Try to pose the same way.
You know what? If they make the Eastern Conference Finals under Ralph Kruger, I'll get my hair like that.
Okay, I'll buy the book.
For a week.
I'll buy the book.
I will get my hair done for a week like that. Like this. I'm going to tweet out the picture.
You got to pose the exact same way.
Yes, of course. And I've got to wear the suit, too.
I
will recreate the picture, and I will have the hair for a week.
Yes.
That's the deal.
I'll buy the book. I will buy the book.
If they make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals under Ralph Kruger in this three-year contract, this initial three-year deal here,
yeah,
I will wear my hair like that for a week.
Okay.
Bet.
I'll do. Okay.
Bet.
Okay.
Bet.
Okay. And I said, I will buy the book. I don't care how much it'll cost.
What did I just do?
You want to do it, though. Because that would mean the Sabres are in the East Final.
That's true. I'm willing to risk my...
hair. Your hair. It's just your hair.
I was going to say my radio appearance. I'm willing to risk my radio appearance, my looks for radio, to...
I mean, you do have a
to
face.
To look like...
I mean, you do have a face for radio.
Yes, maybe the hair will actually help. Who knows? This hairdo is amazingly awesome.
I love this.
Is 90s music video hair right here. I can't wait. Now I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
This is...
Yep.
That's the greatest picture I've ever seen. And yes, we'll get a picture of me replicating that look in the book. Now here's the bad news for me.
Yeah.
Potential bad news for me. Really good news for Sabres. Would be, I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes just made the Eastern Conference Finals this year. They were out of a playoff spot halfway through.
Yeah.
And now they can't win a damn game. Because once again, Boston. I can't have anything nice in this world, and I hate the Boston Bruins, and they're just being a bunch of dinks.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, Carolina can't score. Big bad Boston. I'm going to a bar and get some chowder. My friend Sully from Worcester. Step off, Boston. I hate you all so much.
Rask has been fantastic. I got to give him that.
The funny thing is that he lets in an absolute muffin to make it 2-1.
Yeah.
And he stonewalls everything else.
Yeah. He's allowed 7 goals in his career in the Eastern Conference Final.
I don't believe you. 7?
It might be 8.
7?
Now.
Or 8?
Yeah.
How many times has the man been in the Eastern Conference Finals?
This is the second time.
Really?
The first time was 2013.
Oh, Thomas.
Yeah.
That's right.
The first time was 2013, then when they swept Pittsburgh. And now they're on the verge of sweeping Carolina.
And you do that by letting in single-digit amount of goals in 8 games.
Yes.
That makes some sense. I hate it. Fine. Whatever. Boston, go ahead. Go to the Stanley Cup. But I do want
lose to the Sharks.
I do want the
because
ultimate.
Because of a really bogus call.
Oh, no. Don't just lose to the Sharks. You want to know what I want? I want the connection to go full circle all the way from start to finish in the playoffs.
Joel Thornton scores the
no.
overtime winning goal.
You ready?
Against
Here
Boston.
It is.
In Boston.
The New York Islanders swept Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Who then got swept by Carolina.
Yeah.
Who then gets swept by Boston.
Who then gets swept by
the Western Conference champion.
So San Jose.
Or St. Louis. It could be either.
San Jose, let's be real. I mean, it's...
Oh, that would be the ultimate revenge, because then Joe Thornton lifts a cup in front of the Boston fans.
Though that's exactly it. Well, if it's swept, it'd be in San Jose.
Yeah, it's true. It would be
but it'd be in overtime. Joe Thornton scores the winning goal. Beats the team that drafted him.
And then traded him for peanuts. And it's probably mired in controversy because Sharks.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also mired in controversy.
And then I can hear Boston fans cry foul. It's like, dude, you were down 3 games to none before this moment. What happened? So let's do that.
Exactly.
Let's draw that plan up. There we go.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'll take that, but still.
But if you want it to be in Boston, they would have to win a game. Make it in game 5.
But then that requires Boston to win a game, and I don't want that.
But watching Joel Thornton lift the Stanley Cup
in front of them
in Boston would be great.
You're not wrong.
How about this? Watching Joel Thornton lift the cup beating Boston, no matter where it is, would be great.
Again, you're not wrong.
Okay, good.
All right.
I just want Joel Thornton to win the cup. He deserves it.
All right, are you ready for the idiot of the week?
What'd you do?
Hey! What the hell's that supposed to mean?
You're an idiot.
First off, takes one and no one. Second off, we're doing a bit. Second off, we're doing a bit now on the podcast.
And, okay, great.
It's going to be called Idiot of the Week.
Okay.
You ready for this?
What happened?
So, Idiot of the Week.
Yes.
Whoever runs the NFL Draft's official Twitter page.
Oh, I saw that tweet.
If you haven't, the official account of the NFL Draft, again, the official one, tweeted out. Let me get the exact words.
Wasn't it like...
Let me get the exact words.
Okay.
All right. Hey, NFL, we want a draft lottery too. No, we don't. And no, we don't. That's the first thought I had on that. What the hell are you trying to do there? Official NFL draft. Official NFL draft account. You know, the account that's official to the NFL draft.
Apparently trying to be funny.
If they're being serious, it's pretty dumb. But, you ready for this part? This beauty? If that happened, people decided to look up, okay, if the 2019 NFL draft order would have shaken out if it was similar to the NBA lottery.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who had had the first overall pick?
Who?
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, my God.
Do you know who would have had the second pick?
Who?
I'm going to skip that.
Okay.
Do you want to know who had the third?
Okay.
Do you want to know who has the third pick? The Arizona Cardinals. So they still get their quarterback. You want to know why? Because first is Jacksonville. Oh, they might have actually taken Kyler Murray. Dig back up Nick Foles. Yeah. And the Buffalo Bills would have been selecting second overall. Well, they would have got Quinnen Williams.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have had to trade up for him.
No.
And Daniel Jones would have probably been selected to the New York Giants at pick 9.
Yep. Yep.
Or Dave Gettleman would have traded up to take Daniel Jones at pick 6 to get in front of the Raiders.
Yep.
So Daniel Jones probably still goes 6th overall. Wait, the Raiders had a chance to take Daniel Jones, and they passed on him. So
they did. They took Farrell. They still would have taken him.
Actually, real quick, I want to... I want to do a mock draft of the lottery,
okay,
1 through 14.
Okay, so Jacksonville is at 1.
Jacksonville at 1, I would say they take Nick Bosa.
Yes.
Because they ended up with Josh Allen, and they probably would have just taken the best pass rusher available or one of the best players available. I would have think that it'd be Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams.
I think it would have been Bosa.
And then that gives the Bills Quinnen Williams.
Yeah.
Pick 3 to the Cardinals, Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
Pick 4, Bengals.
Oh, since he had pick 4?
Since he would have vaulted all the way to pick 4.
Would they have taken Allen?
Probably. They ended up with an offensive lineman, though. They took Jonah Williams.
Yeah, but I don't think they would have taken one that high, if they were that high, though.
That's true.
They probably would have went with Allen.
I probably would have went with Josh Allen, yeah. I would agree with that. Pick 5, the 49ers. No Williams, no Josh Allen, no Nick Bosa for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's interesting, actually. What the 49ers would have done.
Devin White?
Probably.
Because Tampa took him at 5.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that. Or they might have even gone with the likes of Ed Oliver.
Yeah.
Or Cleveland Farrell.
No.
All right, so pick 6, the Jets.
That they probably would have taken Oliver.
Yeah, that's where Ed Oliver ends up, and the Bills and Jets swap D tackles.
Yeah.
7, the Raiders, Cleveland Farrell.
I would assume so.
Then you said Devin White, right?
Yes.
So Tampa loses out on him, but I think they go Devin Bush.
Yeah. Pittsburgh.
They still get a linebacker named Devin.
Yeah, Pittsburgh wouldn't be able to trade to 10.
Pick 9, Giants, Daniel Jones.
Yeah, assume so. Yes.
Guess what? Pick 10, the Lions, T.J. Hockenson probably.
Yeah.
Look at that. We get one that stays the same. Pick 11, the Broncos. They probably stay the same. Oh wait, no, they traded out. They traded out of there.
They traded out because they were originally at pick 10.
Yeah.
And they traded it to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh took Bush.
They wound up with Noah Fant.
Yeah.
I think that they probably go offensive line like Jonah Williams or something there.
Yeah.
Then they wouldn't have had to take Risner in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't mock a trade in this hypothetical either.
Yeah.
Pick 12 is the Dolphins. And the Dolphins.
They probably stick with Christian Wilkins.
And the Dolphins at pick 13 took Christian Wilkins. And then pick 13 is the Packers, and they ended up with Rashawn Gary.
Probably stayed the same.
And then pick 14, the Falcons.
Chris Lidstrom.
Which, by the way, the Falcons would have stayed at pick 14.
Yep.
The only one that didn't change. Well, that was fun.
That's fun.
That said, official NFL draft account, you're stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to tank in football.
It is.
You either have to rip a team apart and void it of all hope like the Oakland Raiders did, and they still ended up at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just have to be absolute booty, forget about an offensive line, miss on your draft picks in the first round since 2015 at minimum, and still be able to employ the guy whose judgment is so bad at this point that he gets pulled over for DUIs because he doesn't get a cab despite having tons of money. Steve Keim should be fired, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So how funny was the NBA draft lottery on Tuesday?
I mean,
more so just, I just found it really funny with all the Knicks fans. They're in the top 4. And then they're like, oh my God, yes, we're getting pick 1. Yes, oh my God. And then they're at pick 3. And it's just sheer disappointment.
They still have an outside shot at Ja Morant.
Well, a lot of the talk.
I can't even say outside shot. They have a legitimate chance at Ja Morant.
A lot of the talk is that Memphis is going to take him at 2.
But again, there's still a chance at it.
There's still a chance, but as of right now for the Knicks, Zion's going to New Orleans. Morant's likely going to Memphis. The Knicks probably are going to get RJ Barrett.
And that's a
Zion's
player.
Zion's teammate.
And that's
Which
a player
is still
that,
a good player.
That's also the player that the Knicks have been linked to.
Yeah.
A decent amount. So, yeah, you're still getting a pretty damn good player here. Zion, Ja Morant, and then you could end up with a Duke teammate that could do just as well for you.
Yeah. But
RJ Barrett's there.
Knicks fans are like, we want this kid from Duke. They get RJ Barrett. Not that kid, the other one.
We meant the other one. Well, guess what? You can't always get what you want.
Yeah.
Also, you're the Knicks.
And then the Lakers are at pick 4, which is pretty interesting for them. Think about this. Two of the teams.
What is with the Lakers, by the way?
The
only thing that I know that is being run worse is the New York frickin' Jets.
The Giants?
No, I said the Jets.
I know, but the Giants exist.
Yeah, but at least they kept their general manager after free agency and the NFL draft. And Adam Gase is a head case.
Yeah.
Gets the general manager fired just a couple months into his job.
Yeah.
Takes over as interim GM.
Yep.
And then trades linebacker Darren Lee for pennies.
Yep.
Adam Gase is the gift that keeps on giving for Bills fans and Patriots fans, it seems. Because he ruined the Dolphins.
Yep.
And now, looks like he's going to ruin the Jets.
I feel bad for Sam Darnold.
I don't.
I like Darnold. He's a good kid.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't feel bad for him. Because, hey, it me, a division rival.
Well, yeah. I feel bad for the kid. I feel bad for him.
I think he'll be okay.
He'll probably be fine. He's a good quarterback.
His head case of a coach is going to get fired in 2 years. It's okay.
Yeah.
Man, probably. Adam Gase, you are just all sorts of stupid, man. Have fun. All right, man. Thank you for listening to the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
Thank you to Jeff Chapman for joining us to talk about the Krugs. Yeah, I'm calling them the Krugs. Why? Because I'm probably going to get hair that looks like the Krugs. Yes. No, that's the Krugs. The guy in the book is the Krugs.
Yes,
he is Ralph Krueger, but that man on that book, that's the Krugs. I'll tweet that out as well, so be on the lookout for that. But yes, that's coming down. Like, I'm stamping this right now. If the Sabres make the Eastern Conference Finals within the 3 years of Ralph Krueger as the head coach, I will get my hair done like that it is on the cover of his book. And
love
I will
it.
Get a picture of with that pose and everything.
Love it.
There it is. I'm willing to do it, and I'm willing to go ahead and put my stupid hair on the line for it. So thank you for listening. And, hey, next week we'll get Kyle back. Look at that. Things will be
nice.
Normal. We'll be back to normal here.
PGA Championship is this week too.
That's true. Hey,
second major of the year.
I always got to do this for my friendos at the Tee to Green golf show.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them. 2 hours actually on Saturday.
Ooh.
Yeah, you get 2 hours worth of Brian, Kevin, and Jeff from 7 to 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. So give that a listen as well. They'll give you their picks as the weekend rounds up in the PGA Championship, and they'll give you all the coverage of what's going on so far.
Just some notables right as of right now. Brooks Koepka, the defending champion, is leading the pack at 6 under for today. He is through 16 holes. Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood, 3 shots back at 3 under. He finishes round with a 67. Tiger Woods, everyone's going to be following him. Right now, 1 over par.
Ah.
But it's very close, though, with everyone else. Because right now it's Koepka 1 at 6 under. You got a dude, Luke List, 4 under. He's second. Fleetwood's 3rd at 3 under. You got a couple guys at 2. A bunch of players at 1. And then a lot of players at even par. And then there's Tiger.
So a big first day from Koepka might help out here.
Yes.
That dude's good.
He's very good.
He's also jacked.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for listening. And, hey, who knows? Hopefully we can get to the Eastern Conference Finals next year and I can look like the Krugs. Then again, who knows? We could miss that call, too.